Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
And just like the holistic approach that Risely takes with the DCB, it's like you're not just worried about our numbers and you actually encourage us not to focus on our numbers. You just tell us like focus on your patterns, learn your body and see what it's telling you. And, you know, I feel like, yeah, my numbers improved, but it's not because I was focusing on my numbers. It's because you guys helped me focus on me as a whole person, not just me as a diabetic, you know?
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Welcome back, everyone. It's your host, Lauren Bongiorno, and we have Megan Balmy on the show today. Megan has lived with type 1 diabetes for almost 10 years, and it wasn't until the past 6 months, though, that she stopped feeling like, in her words, diabetes was a death sentence. This idea of transforming your relationship to diabetes so drastically is something that's hard to grasp and even believe is possible until it happens. So Megan talks through in this conversation how she was actually able to bring her transformation to life. She talks about her struggles from going to shots to a pump and how she finally learned to optimize it, why putting herself first and asking for help was so life-changing, healing her toxic relationship with the Dexcom Arrows. And we also discuss how the Decide and Conquer group coaching bootcamp changed the trajectory of her life with T1D. Megan's Reclaiming Her Rise story is so relatable and really shows how the empowerment we have the potential to tap into goes way beyond the numbers. And I'm excited for you to hear it. So help me introduce my guest, Megan, and let's rise. In the spirit of the podcast title, can you tell us about a time when you realized that you reclaimed your rise with diabetes?
Oh my goodness, yes. So I think my biggest epiphany moment where I reclaimed my rise was last October. I had just started the DCB and I was 3 weeks in because I put basal testing off this weekend and felt like the worst DCB member ever for it. But I was away with friends. We try to go away like once a year and it's just a totally chill weekend where there's like tons of carbs, you know, like there's alcohol, no sleep, lack of structure. It's just like very relaxing. But not so much for a diabetic. So there was one point in this weekend where I had looked down at my CGM app and I saw 360 and a sideways arrow up. And that was a pretty high number. Like I hadn't seen a number that high since like close to my diagnosis. So there was something in my head that just like immediately clicked. And I was like, you need to stop right now and take control over this, because if you don't, you're going to create a big scene. And that's the last thing that you want to do. So I did. I like stepped away from what we were doing. I did my sugar squats, took my insulin, drank some water, did all the things. And then I guess like people in the house just started coming up to me and they were like, are you okay? Like, why are you doing squats in the middle of the house? And in that moment, I feel like I reclaimed my rise entirely and I just spoke up for what I needed. I shared that I was having a high blood sugar and if I didn't do these things, I didn't know what was going to happen with my numbers. You know, I was eating a lot of carbs and drinking. And at that point, I didn't know how any of those things affected me. So I really had no idea where I was going to go after that. But it was so cool because after that moment, for the rest of the weekend, you know, people were checking on me, asking what my numbers were. At one point, everybody was watching my pod change. And it was so cool because it was like the moment where I literally had accepted that diabetes was part of me and something that I would be able to balance at some point. And I think I had always just like lived with diabetes and brushed it under the rug and then paid attention to it when it was convenient for me. But in this weekend, I was like, you know what? No, like this is part of who I am. And I accept it and have to learn how to find a balance with it where I can still be present with my friends while also taking care of myself and not picking one over the other. And then since that weekend, every time I see my friends, like, they always have Skittles on hand for me in case my blood sugar goes low. My other friends always like, do we need a squat? And I'm like, no, we're good today. So it was just the coolest weekend because, you know, I look back and so many things have happened since I was diagnosed where I was like, oh yeah, maybe that was it. But like, that weekend just gave me like the confidence to speak up and know that, you know, people are there to support me and I don't have to always talk about diabetes. I don't always have to, you know, be on my CGM, but I can take care of it and also be present with my friends.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because usually you would expect like, oh, when did you reclaim your rise? Or what's the time that you really felt like empowered with your diabetes? You would expect that answer to be, oh, when I had, you know, three straight days of over 90% time in range or when the numbers were perfect. And for you, it sounds like it was more of the representation of, yeah, my blood sugar was high, but in the past, I would have just carried that burden by myself. And I want to dig a little bit deeper into that. So can you tell, like, and we're going to, you know, dissect, I want to dissect like so much of your story because it's so inspiring that like in such a short amount of time, you're in such a different place with your diabetes than when I met you last year. But I want to understand like, where were you? What's a comparison? Like, how would you have handled that in the past? And why was that such a big moment for you?
I would have just let it be because I, you know, I had had a little alcohol. I was eating carbs and I was like, well, I don't want to go low. That's for sure. So I was always like, if I'm riding high, I know I'm going to be fine. But then, you know, as it gets closer to 400, that's kind of where I fear like DKA a lot. So I will be like a little more proactive. But, you know, in the past, I would have just let that number ride. I would have taken a little insulin, but I would have kept doing what everybody else was doing because the last thing you want to do is step away and draw attention to yourself. And, you know, in the DCB, we talk so much about like feeling like a burden to the people around you. And I was like, I am not going to be that person. I'm not going to step away. I'm not going to have anyone wonder what's going on. I'm just going to sit here and suffer, for lack of a better word. So yeah, that's definitely how it would have gone previously.
Okay. So it was almost this is the thing that I have to deal with myself. I don't want to draw attention to it. I don't want to let other people in. Tell me, let's go back even further. So you were diagnosed, is it almost 10 years? For you?
It'll be 10 years in September. Yeah.
Okay. Almost a full decade. So it'll almost be 10 years. Let's go back to the first 9 years before this transformation that you've had. Like, what was your experience like of what were the biggest things that you struggled with, you would say, other than just maybe like not letting people into your diabetes or kind of just letting it ride high?
Yeah. I think acceptance, confidence, balance was a huge one. And even just sustainability, which we talk about a lot. But I think those are the four things that were just, there was none of it. And like for balance, it was just like all diabetes or no diabetes. And there was no in between ever.
And I was just reading to you offline before we came on. I was like, I was stalking through your intake form for when you first applied for coaching in 2021. And I want to read this out loud so we can really put into perspective like where you were and how, I guess, overwhelming it might have been for you at the time, where diabetes now, we can talk about how it feels, but isn't quite like this. But the question asks, where do you want to be at the end of 2021 in the following areas with your diabetes management, exercise, mindset, and overall health? And I'll read part of it. And you said, with diabetes management, I don't expect my numbers to be perfect, but I want to feel more in control of them. I am so embarrassed of my numbers / stats on my CGM right now because I don't feel like I can manage my diabetes well consistently. For exercise, I want to go on a 3-mile walk without having to call someone to pick me up because of an urgent low. This may be my biggest goal because walking is my favorite stress reliever and I haven't been able to do it as much because diabetes is governing so much of my choices. And for mindset, I don't want to feel like diabetes is a death sentence where I have to give my life to trying to improve it. And then there's more, but that at the end you say, I would like to see my A1C drop to 6.3 over the next year. I don't know if it's possible in the next 3 months, but lowering it all would be amazing. So I want to hone in on the death sentence part. Like, let's really talk about that piece. What are some ways that I guess limited you in your life of living with diabetes where you felt like it was this death sentence? You mentioned all or nothing, right? So it had to be this thing where you either focusing on 100% or you weren't at all. And if you weren't, then it was you're losing out on life and you have the risk too of like DKA and other complications, like you said.
Yeah, I think, you know, anxiety was playing a huge role there because you see a high number and then I was right to like, okay, I'm going to have like kidney problems and other problems and just like I would spiral. And I think that that really took over me and I didn't even have a chance to really enjoy a lot of my life because I was always so worried about diabetes. And it was the overwhelming thought of, I have to live with this forever. I don't know like how this is sustainable because the way I was managing it, I could not do for the rest of my life. And just even like with my relationships with family, my husband, my friends, like they were so tainted because of the anxiety and the overwhelm of diabetes that it really did feel like I was, how am I going to live with diabetes for the rest of my life? And even like you mentioned walking, like I literally couldn't go on a walk because I would have severe, severe lows. And then I like hit, I think I was like just under 30 one time. And I was like, I can't even do what I like because I have diabetes. And it just limited me in so many aspects of my life that it really did feel like a death sentence before I started the DCB.
Yeah. And that's frustrating, right? Like you said, like, because you're told so much when you're diagnosed, diabetes is just this thing. You have to take insulin for it, like count your carbs. Like it's not going to hold you back from doing anything. And you see people who are so inspiring, right? Who fly planes with type 1 diabetes and who are actors and musicians and all these idols that we have. But at the end of the day, it's like, we just sometimes want to aspire to not necessarily be those things, but just do the things that we want to do, which is go through our day with not having a roller coaster or going on a walk and not having that severe low and being like feeling like a failure and like you have to call somebody to come get you. So with that, like you bring up your family, like how did they perceive what was going on and did they try to help? Like, were they really invested in like, I don't know, like how you were feeling and what was that dynamic like?
It was really hard because I think, you know, I was thinking about this last night. When you're diagnosed with diabetes, like you're given like the formulas and the insulin and it's just like, okay, like if you're this number, correct at this number, if you're that, this, eat this when you're low and like go see a dietitian. And then that's it. And you don't really understand the science behind anything and you're kind of just, you have to figure it out. And so, you know, my mom carried a lot of it because I was, you know, living at home when I was diagnosed. So she kind of saw, you know, everything from the beginning. And I could see like the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like just how much she was hurting for me when she would see me in those moments. And like, there was nothing she could do and there was really not much anybody could do because nobody knew how to help me. Like diabetes is not well understood by a lot of people and now I can advocate for myself and everyone can help me much better now. But it was hard and, you know, like it's at family parties or holidays, it's like, oh, well, she can't have the brownie, but we have a fruit bowl for her. And it's just like, again, like you're just that burden where like there has to be something else there for you because you can't have this and you're limited in that way. And I think, you know, especially with my immediate family, it was just really hard because it took over and it was just always like, is Megan okay? Oh, Megan's going on a walk. We have to make sure somebody's home. And it's just like, you go back to like this dependency that you don't want. Like you want to be independent and have your freedom and you can't because you don't even understand what's happening in your body.
Mm. And you were in your, you were 20, like around 20, right? 19, 20 when you were diagnosed?
Sorry. It was right before my 19th birthday. So I was 18.
Okay. So yeah, you're in this stage where too, like you're trying to find your independence and you know, just, yeah, exploring what independence feels like. And then you automatically go back into this kind of like child's self where you're like depending on other people or you're worrying other people and your independence, I guess, is diminished a little bit because of too, like how you're feeling and how you view yourself. So I'm curious if you were on shots for a bunch of years before you went on a pump. So did the acceptance of diabetes have anything to do or like not accepting fully diabetes have anything to do with that?
So really interesting story. I went on the pump, I think 4 years after I was diagnosed. And I didn't have enough support when I went onto it. And I wound up going off of it. Because I'm like, I have no idea what the heck I'm doing. And I kind of knew what I was doing on shots. That I like ripped that pad off. And after like, I think I was on it for a year. I like gave my pods to a friend who had a sister with diabetes and I was like, I'm done because I can't manage my diabetes. I feel like I'm more out of control with the pump. And I went back on shots, but I feel like I did that because shots were familiar to me. And I just, that's what I was doing for 4 years. And I had mastered diabetes with shots. But then I remember my doctor saying, you know, like, you should really get a Dexcom. And I was like, no way am I sticking something on my body where people are going to see that I have this. Because you go through, like you said, that like almost denial where it's like, well, if I'm at the beach, I have this thing and everyone's going to wonder what it is or why I have it, or God, even worse, like come up to me and ask what it is. So I definitely think that part of it was the acceptance of like having it on your body and almost like showing people that it's there. But then, you know, once I went on the pump, it really did help me accept it, which is ironic because I feel like oftentimes that's really like the biggest leap. And, you know, like now at the beach, people will come up to me and be like, oh my God, you have a pod. And I'm like, you have a pod. And it's like the coolest thing ever. But yeah, I think there was a little bit of that with the pump for sure.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. And I want to talk about that too, because that is the biggest thing that we hear from people who come into the Rizely community is like, I thought that going on the pump or going on a CGM would make my blood sugars better. And sometimes it does, but it's almost like there's two things that happen. One, it becomes, their numbers become even crazier if they go from shots to a pump, let's say, or option two is they can lower their A1C from, let's say, hypothetically, like an 8 to a 7, but they can't figure out how to get it below that point, and they just don't know how to optimize the pump that they're using. And what was your experience like, I guess, with your pump specialist or that first time that you got on the pump, and that's what that support was like? Because it sounds like you didn't really have great support with it.
Yeah. So I would say like when I met with the person and like we talked about like how to put it on and like what to do with it, like it was awesome. And like the girl was amazing, really supportive. But then like I think it just got to a point where it was like almost just out of, I don't know if it was out of her realm or what, but like I would like text her all the time because I was having such bad lows or such bad highs, or like I would correct and nothing would happen. And obviously looking back, like probably all of my rates and numbers were just off that needed to be changed. But it just got to a point where I was so frustrated that I was like, I'm so tired of like texting somebody to help me who like barely knows me. And it was just, like, I don't even think that at that point, like, she really could have helped me with what I needed. And that's why, like, I think with what Rizely does with the DCB, like, you need that so much, because a lot of times it's just, like, how to fix it and really not the why. Like, well, why are the lows happening? Let's look at what happened before. It's just like, oh, the low is happening, so eat, you know, 10 sugar gummies or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know if it was, she was supportive in the beginning, but then I think it just got to a point where it was like I needed so much more and I didn't know what to do at that point.
Right. And so your answer was like, all right, let me just take it off and go back to what was kind of a little bit better. It wasn't great, but like it was better than what it is right now. Yeah. And I think this is like a great opportunity to talk about a little about just why the way that the system is set up with healthcare right now as it is it's like, go to your doctor. Your doctor is going to give you all the tools that you need, and come to us when you have questions or come to us when you're having problems. But the problem is that they're not with you 24/7, and they don't understand your lifestyle, your sleep cycles, your nutrition, like all of those in-depth things that you do need to know if you want to be really empowered and confident with your diabetes. And so you're set up to fail, right? Instead of on day one, which is what I would imagine, like the perfect world for me would be, if I could visualize it, it would be you're diagnosed with diabetes and like you go into this like just place of getting to know your body's patterns and how to operate and own diabetes on your own. And then your doctor being there kind of like as a support system on the side, or to like troubleshoot some things that, you know, or prescriptions, like all those necessary things. But you really are in the driver's seat. And like, that's the piece that's missing and why there's such a need right now for support, especially from what we're doing in health coaching and at Rizely, is like putting you back in the driver's seat, getting to know your patterns, getting to know how to navigate your body. Because at the end of the day, all you have is you, and the technology is great, but it's not there to fix the problems. You can't depend on it. It's a tool to be utilized and optimized. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And how, so then you decided to go back on the pump again. I think it was was it last year or was it a little before that?
It was 2 months before the DCB started, so I guess July.
Okay, so you're like, I'm going to do this thing again, and then take us through what that time was like and how that was different than the first time.
So this time around was even worse. I put makeup on and I was like hitting 40 consistently. Like I was just eating so much to the point where like I didn't even want sweets anymore because I was eating so much of them. And then I would be like super high and it was just constantly like up, down and never in range. And that was where like, you know, I had followed you on Instagram for years and I was always on the sidelines just watching and I'm like, okay, like maybe this will work. I had like researched a few other health coaching programs, but I kept coming back to Risley because of like how holistic the approach was and just how transparent you are with everything you do. And that's where I was like, I have to take control of my health and I can't do it on my own. Like I tried so many things to figure it out and it just, I couldn't do it. I didn't have the means that I needed. So after I think it was like a month or maybe even just 3 weeks back on the pod, I was like, I need help. And I wasn't afraid to admit it at that point. And I filled out the form on Risley's site and I was like, I just have to do it. I have to pull the trigger and give it a try because I have nothing to lose at this point. Like it can't get any worse. And I wasn't really sure what to expect from the program because I initially signed up for one-on-one coaching and then like didn't really know a lot about the DCB.
Oh yeah, you applied for one-on-one coaching. And then I think yes. You talked to Jess and Jess was like, no. Like you, the DCB is good for you. Okay, sorry.
Okay. Jess knows. She knows it all. But yeah, so I wound up going through the DCB and I'm so grateful for those. I feel like those highs and lows in the beginning of my pod experience because I would not be here if those didn't happen. So I guess I'm finding the silver lining of the tougher days with diabetes.
Yeah. Well, it's really hard. It's almost like what we find is people have to be in so much pain and they have to recognize the pain too. Yeah. They can be so limited in their life, but some people don't even realize it. And it's that point when they do realize it of like, wow, like I'm just so comfortable living like this. And I am now realizing like I don't want to live like this anymore. And it's at that point where they reach out for help and for coaching. And sometimes it takes kind of hitting that rock bottom to do so. I'd say the only other time it's a little bit different is if somebody's like prepping for, let's say, pregnancy, where they like know like the back's up against the wall, they have to, if they want to start a family, like get their numbers under control and do it in a sustainable way. And like that's another motivating factor too. I want to take a quick intermission to talk about finding a cure for type 1 diabetes and to give a special shout out to the Diabetes Research Institute Foundation, who is sponsoring the podcast. I recently talked to one of the DRI scientists and they shared with me that there is a lot of focus nowadays on finding a quote unquote technology cure for diabetes, but that DRI's main focus has been and always will be to find a biological cure. They don't want to create a band-aid, they want to get to the root. When the DRI was founded in 1971, it was founded on the belief that the combined forces of science and philanthropy could achieve this bold vision of a world without diabetes. I've personally seen DRI grow so much over the last 20 plus years, and one of the most recent growth moments has been Sean Kramer coming in as CEO. And if you don't know him and want to know more about who Sean is behind the curtain, go to the DRI Instagram page. It's linked in the show notes at Diabetes Research. And check out the 60-second rapid-fire Q&A video that him and I did. It's so entertaining. It was so fun to do. And you'll get to hear the advice he'd give to his newly diagnosed self, his favorite hard-to-bolus for meals, his favorite injection spot, and more. And lastly, I want to share that funding is the driving force that allows the DRI scientists to speed their discoveries up. So visit diabetesresearch.org/give today and make a donation or send your family that link for when they ask for what to get you for your birthday. Thank you so much, DRI, and I hope that you'll check them out. But yeah, so I mean, you come into the DCB and you're coming from this place of your A1C is kind of fine on paper. I think it was like a 7.1 or 7.0 when it started. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to optimize your technology. Everything's all over the place. You don't really know how to bolus for meals. You're just going high and low and kind of being reactive. What was, I guess, the biggest thing that contributed to your success over those 3 months that got you to where you are today?
Oh my goodness, that's a hard question to answer. There was so much. I think... Community would be number one, which, you know, Jess was right. She was like, you need a community. And she knew before I knew. But the community of just like hearing everybody else's stories and seeing the vulnerability that people were willing to have with everybody and share, like, today was a terrible day, or today was a great day, or just like, today was a day, but this is what happened. And even just like being ready to take control of my own health. You know, I was in denial for so long that like, I wasn't ready to really like put my all into it. But you know, once I got to that point where I was having those crazy highs and those crazy lows and I didn't even know how to help myself, it gave me like, I guess, the fire under my butt to start really working hard and putting myself first. And just like the holistic approach that Risely takes with the DCB, it's like, you're not just worried about our numbers and you actually encourage us not to focus on our numbers. You just tell us like, focus on your patterns, learn your body and see what it's telling you. And, you know, I feel like, yeah, my numbers improved, but it's not because I was focusing on my numbers. It's because you guys helped me focus on me as a whole person, not just me as a diabetic, you know?
So well said. Well, yeah, because the thing is that when we try to like control something so tightly, it almost just like bounces back, kind of thinking about it like a rubber band, where you want to go like around the problem and you want to see like, what can you add in? Like, where can we improve in that like 8 pillars, right? So at the beginning of the program, we have all of our clients rate themselves on a scale of 0 through 10 in terms of fulfillment in different areas like peace of mind and stress and anxiety management and sleep and energy and relationship to food, nutrition, all these different places. And it's like, that's what makes up what your blood sugar outcome is. And it almost more easily happens when you do it that way, because you're not trying to like manipulate the numbers or fight against a stream that's like going the opposite way. It's like, you're just learning to work with your body. So with that, like letting go of the concern about the numbers so much and kind of focusing on those other areas, was there any like areas that you feel really contributed to your overall success and improvement with your diabetes management? Was it like sleep improving or learning about your hormones or insulin sensitivity or stress and anxiety management decreasing? Like, which one of those do you think was like one of the biggest?
It's interesting because you were just talking about this with Dr. Alana the other day, but totally the stress and anxiety management, because it allowed me to get off of this like fight or flight mode and just like sit with what I was looking at and just say like, let me see where this goes so I know for next time how I can do it better. Because that's what I would do. Like, I would see the arrow and I would take insulin, or I would see the arrow down and I would eat. And I was just always reacting to the point where I never knew what was happening or why it was happening. But you guys just encourage us to like, just let it happen, like see where it goes, and then you can make it better. And just being okay with that, and almost you guys giving us permission to do that, is I think what made the biggest difference in my success, at least with the DCB.
Yeah. And you bring up an interesting point too there, which is you had space to let it happen. And you knew that it was a 3-month program and you didn't have an option, because you were invested in it, to give up. And I think that's what usually happens too. I mean, we're humans, right? Like, I've done this 100 times in my lifetime too, where you start something and you have this vision of like, okay, like this is day one and like, I'm gonna, you know, have the best blood sugars, or I'm gonna eat great, I'm gonna exercise every day. And then by day three, everything is like all over the place and yep, you get defeated and you think you failed and you're so far away from your goal, back to square one or even like before square one, and you're like, I can't do this. And that's when the limiting beliefs start to set in. It's the, I'm a failure, here we go again, I have no willpower, I'm never going to figure this out, nobody can help me, like this is my life. And yep, once you start thinking like that, those thoughts like become ingrained and they become part of your identity. And so when you are committing to a longer stretch period that is not necessarily based on like today's day one, the trajectory is you have to be perfect every day until the end of this program. And it's more of a, you're gonna mess, like your numbers are gonna be up and down like throughout this program. And like, we want that to happen. We want you to get sick. We want you to travel. We want you to go outside of your routine, because those are gonna give you opportunities to learn. And we can't expect perfection, because that's never going to happen, right? Like, what we say is 80% fine tuning, 20% acceptance for when diabetes is going to diabetes, and it's going to sometimes. But yeah, like, did you get any time that you were like demotivated, throughout the program? Do you remember feeling like, oh, I can't do this, or I'm going back to my old patterns? Like, what was your trajectory like over the 3 months? And what do you think it would have been if you did it on your own, but you in your mind were like, I'm going to set to, like, in the next 3 months, take care of my diabetes?
So it's funny you mentioned that, because I'm totally the one to be like full steam ahead for 7 days. And then on that eighth day, I'm like, okay, I'm exhausted. I can't do it anymore. So yeah, that I can totally relate to what you're saying there. And if I had done it on my own, I probably would have stuck with it and had really solid numbers for a week. And then I would have been like, okay, I did it. And then I would just go back to the way I used to do it. But like, again, like going back to that sustainability piece, it's like I did get a little, I hit like a funk towards the end of basal testing, because I just had a rough go at it and it took me so long, and I love food and like not eating was so hard, even just for like small periods of time. I like to graze. But like it just, I kept going back to that thought of like, okay, you were able to complete these other basal tests. You were able to do this. And then like, obviously like you guys and the other coaches, like you were cheering me on and like, no, you can do this, keep going. But I did hit a little bit of a funk, but then you get out of it because the sustainability of the program teaches you like it's not going to be perfect all the time. And if you want diabetes to work for you, like you have to accept that it's not going to be perfect all the time. And you know this, I'm a huge perfectionist. And so understanding that concept was kind of like a total, like my mind was blown, but made all the difference, because now I know like some days I am just going to have a day where diabetes is going to diabetes, but you're given the tools on how to like persist and push through, which I think is the coolest thing.
Okay. Let's talk about Dexcom arrows. Are you down to talk about Dexcom arrows?
Just because I have a toxic relationship with Dexcom arrows, we're working on it.
Yes, I know. But I think it's really important to hear, because Dexcom and just CGM in general is this like, oh my gosh, God's gift to the diabetes community, right? And we talk about it on the coaching team a lot. We're like, how much stress and anxiety CGMs are causing? Like, we think we know, because those arrows and the buzzing and all of it is like a shock to your system every time you're looking. And when we didn't have CGMs, like I grew up for 15 years without a CGM, and it was like you didn't know what your blood sugars were or you didn't have the availability really to look at it every 3 minutes, right? And flip over your phone. And so how, I know you're still working on it, but how was your relationship with Dexcom versus how it is now?
Well, Trista's a great coach and the relationship is a little less toxic now. But in the beginning, like as soon as that arrow was going somewhere that wasn't straight, I was doing something, whether it was taking insulin or eating. Didn't matter what the number was, I was doing something about it. But now, you know, like I feel like something you guys are so great at Risley is just giving us like small challenges to achieve. And then you give us a next challenge just to kind of like get us to where we want to be. It's not like, okay, at like 160 arrow down, I'm eating. It's like, well, what would it feel like if you started eating at like 140? So I think that's really helped. I'm still working on it a little bit, but I feel like taking CGM breaks also really helped me, because it's pretty remarkable what my numbers look like when I don't have the CGM on versus when I do. Like I took a 3-day break last weekend and had one number that was out of range the entire weekend. And I was like, Megan, what are you doing? So Tris is challenging me to take more breaks, but
I just did a post on that this morning, literally right before we came on. I don't know if you saw it, but I haven't had my CGM on for the past 48 hours. And like my numbers, the highest I've been is 202, and I haven't had any lows. And I feel my highs and lows. Like I feel my body once I start like hitting like 180, and same thing with like lows. I feel it at like 70. And so I know I wasn't like higher or lower than what the numbers were saying every 2 hours, but I'm looking at them and I was like, damn, like maybe I should just like keep encouraging like the CGM not to go on. But it really comes from I think the not reacting to the arrows, because even I do that sometimes, right? Like you get into the habit of eating, your blood sugar starts to rise. You automatically think in your head, oh shoot, I didn't give enough insulin, instead of thinking, oh, if I didn't have diabetes, my arrow would be up as well, because that's what happens to everybody when their blood sugar rises. And this is just an insulin timing thing, and the insulin's going to kick in, and I trust my rates and ratios, so it's going to bring me back down to in range or where I'm supposed to be. And it gives you like the space to just like be patient with your body, I think. Is that what you think it is, the patience? Yeah.
Totally. And I love what you said about just like trusting too, because I think, you know, you always encourage us to use it as a tool, not as like the thing that governs everything. Like, it's just a piece of technology to help us. It's not something that's meant to cause the anxiety that it is. But it really does. It's just having the trust, which you gain through like all the testing we do in the DCB and all of that. But yeah, I think that taking those breaks and just, it helps me also be more mindful about what I'm doing. Like I'm a little more mindful with a pre-bolus when I don't have it on, cause I'm like, okay, like I want to make sure it's okay. Whereas when I have it on, I'm like, well, I'll see it go up anyway and then it's going to be fine. But yeah, I don't know. I think the mindfulness piece is a huge one too.
Yeah, that's huge. There actually was, a conversation, where was it this week? I can't remember. Oh, it was on a for the A1C shift method course. We were doing this like live 7-week version of it instead of it just being a course. And on one of the calls, it was a reoccurring theme that kept coming up, which was like slowing down. Slowing down is like the key to diabetes, because what, I forget what the exercise that we did was, but it was essentially like take your problem, like your surface level problem. Oh, it was the 5 whys exercise. We do it in the DCB too, right? It's good because it gets beneath the iceberg of like to the bottom of like what's underneath the water. And everybody on the surface was like, oh, like my problem is like not pre-bolusing, or my problem is like not working out, or my problem is this and this and this. And when we got to it, so many people's answers came down to like, I'm not making space for myself. I'm not prioritizing myself. I'm rushing around. Everything feels urgent in my life. Like all of these things that are just, you know, like spinning out of control and not being mindful, like what you're saying. And even now, like, I don't know, how do you feel about the world kind of opening up? Do you think that that's changed, I guess, your sense of diabetes management? Like, I know you said earlier that you were going to a winery tomorrow with Michael and your husband, and the past 2 years for a lot of people have been like at home in their routine, managing their blood sugars, which are essentially easier than like traveling and going places and parties and whatnot. So what's that been like for you?
I think my situation might be a little different because I was only home for a little while, and then I'm a speech therapist, so we went back pretty early. But when I was home, I was actually like stress eating a ton. So my numbers were worse. And I just, truthfully, like my stress at that first like 3 months of COVID was so high that I was like, I don't care about anything right now. Like, I'm just going to eat. I'm going to watch TV. And it was terrible. But then once I got back into work, I feel like, ironically enough, that's when I started to take the space for myself. And I, you know, it's like you see other people and like their panic, and then it makes you like almost check yourself too. And so I think I never really had the opportunity to like be home all the time and really like hone in on things. But I think that also helped me realize that I did need the help, because like I'd be at work and I'd get home and I'd just see like a solid 250 for the whole day. And I'm like, okay, you got to do something here. Whereas at home, I wasn't as mindful because I was cleaning the house or watching TV or doing other things, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I guess it is different for everybody right now in this phase of their life. Some people are going out more. For you, it's like this has kind of been what's been happening. But it's interesting that you say that, because you were doing the DCB and you were going through this transformation with your diabetes with already these extra layer of challenges, with being, let's say, like going to work and not just being at home, or with maybe having, you know, coming home and having to make a meal quick and then, you know, needing to strategize that on the way home and what you're going to do with insulin. So I guess for you, like, do you feel confident inside your routine with diabetes and outside your routine with diabetes now, like with the winery tomorrow? Like in the past, would you have been like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? My numbers are going to be crazy. I'm just going to run high. Whereas tomorrow you feel more confident going into it?
So much more confident. Like, it's amazing. And I think transformation is like the perfect word to describe me at this time in my life now, because, you know, I really enjoy wine. My husband makes his own wine. So like, it's just always around. So I drink a lot of wine, not too much, but like I never bolused for it. And then we went to a winery actually when we were away when I did my CGM break. And I like confidently bolused for sangria with like no panic at all, which I would have never, ever, ever done before. And I was low on test strips, so that was like a huge risk. But I did it because I knew, I was like, I just looked at it and I'm like, I know that that's going to make me spike. And I took insulin. So I think after the DCB, I'm so much more confident inside and outside of routine. But like, you know, the example I gave at the start of our call when I was away with friends, like that was so outside of my routine. And look what happened to my blood sugar. Whereas like anytime I deviated, I would skyrocket or plummet. And if I was in my routine and I had the same food every day, I could do it. But the second I went out to eat or went out with friends, it was hard to enjoy it because of the trouble that I had.
Yeah. And so I guess we're already doing diabetes 24/7, right? And we hear from a lot of people that it's hard to spend more time on their diabetes, to make more time for themselves to journal on their patterns or exercise or whatever it is. So how do you think, what do you think people need to hear to get through that mindset block and finally say, yeah, I need to prioritize myself because I want to enjoy things like going to a winery or going to work and not coming home at 2:50 or whatever it is?
I think I'm going to take a lesson from the DCB for this one, but I think like almost finding time for what's important, like there's always time and it's just a matter of how you're going to allocate that time. And for me, I was totally one of those people that said like, oh, well, everybody else could use my help right now. I'm not going to help myself, or everybody else is playing this game and I want to play this game. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to take this time that I need to figure out my blood sugar or whatever I need. So taking that time is honestly, I feel like, not to sound so simplistic, but all we need to do. And once you take time and you're able to step back and just kind of look at the picture in front of you, you can make so much more progress that we get in our own way so much because we're always, you know, especially as women, like I feel like it's just in our nature to prioritize other people or be there for our friends, family, whoever. And we don't ever say like, what do I need right now? And what can I do for myself? But it's so interesting too, because then when you speak up and you take that time for yourself and you tell people what you need, you get everything you need because you surround yourself with people who love you and appreciate you and want to see you succeed. So I think in a roundabout way, we really just have to make time for ourselves.
So well said. So well said. And I think it's easier, obviously, being on the other side of it because you've seen the reward of prioritizing yourself. But yeah. When you're in it, it's almost like asking yourself, like, is this serving me, right? Like, is this serving me, like, not prioritize myself? And if the answer is no, it's like, all right, well, what are you doing to change it? Like, what is the next best step you can do? Maybe you can't do a complete big overhaul of your life, or maybe you have 5 kids or even just 1 kid, right? And it's like, it's really hard, right? But just because it's hard, like there's always some kind of like 1% shift that you can make that could make all of the difference, or at least move you in the direction that you want to go. And it starts there and then becomes a ripple effect. So last question, speaking of ripple effects, my favorite thing is seeing people graduate the Decide and Conquer Bootcamp or just like coaching in general, and then wanting to kind of like pay it forward and give back. And I know you're having this huge kind of moment in your life right now where you're realizing, wow, like I want to help other people have this transformation. And you recently wrote a blog post for the Risley site with somebody else who came through the DCB, and it was on like friendships and how relationships with T1D are like wasn't what you expected to be like such a huge part of your transformation, but it was. But passing it forward and giving you like the stage right now, or giving you the mic to kind of talk to somebody who might be listening, who you feel like you want to empower to step into like their journey of transformation, like what would you tell them if they feel like it's too hard or it's not worth it to get to the other side, but they're thinking about what would possibly happen if I joined coaching, but I don't know, is it for me? Like, I'm not sure. Like, what would you say?
I think I'd start by saying, like, I see the fear of the uncertainty, and it took me a long time. Like, I was totally in that spot of like, I can do it myself. I don't need help. I'm going to figure this out. And just telling myself the story that like, I could take care of my own health. And I think admitting that you might need help taking care of your own body is really challenging. But when you empower yourself to do that and you give yourself permission to say, I need help, you get the help that you need. And then you form so many relationships and connection. And it's really scary to do and to say, you know, like, I'm going to do this for me and I'm going to take this time. And the DCB is 3 months long, which doesn't sound that long, but it's a huge time commitment because of everything you learn in those 3 months. Like, it is packed. I feel like it could easily be like a 6-month course. But when you take that time and you prioritize yourself, like you become a different person, but you become so much better for it. And I think, you know, I was talking to you, Lauren, just before this and saying, you know, like, I cannot believe the DCB was less than a year ago. Like, I don't know the person I was when I started the DCB. And I think about that person and I hurt for her because she was so in so much pain and she was in such a dark place and so lost. And then you join this program and it just turns your life around. And I never asked myself the question, is this serving you, ever in my life? And then you join the DCB and you learn that question itself can change your life. So I think that's what I'd say to everybody. It's very powerful.
Wow. I have full body chills right now. So you're reminding me today to ask, like, what is going to serve me best today? And I know that somebody listening is going to hear that and be motivated by it and take action. And it might be the thing that they need to hear as a catapult to change their life. So, oh my goodness. Megan, thank you so much for being on. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your lessons and your transformation with us. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for giving everybody such a space all the time. You are incredible and thank you for all you do.
Awesome. I'll talk to you offline.
All right. Bye, Lauren.
All right. So here's the deal. After listening to that episode, I want you to check in with how you're feeling right now, reflect on your own diabetes, and be really brutally honest with where you're at. If you feel like you've been silently carrying the load of diabetes yourself and you're exhausted and overwhelmed by your numbers and mindset, and you know that you need to learn new strategies to get to a more empowered and confident place, but you don't know how or what that looks like, I want to invite you to apply to our Spring Decide and Conquer Group Coaching Bootcamp. Over 250 women have graduated from this program and were once feeling exactly how you may be feeling right now, but they took a chance, they followed their intuition, they applied, they got on an enrollment call, and they said yes to themselves, they started, they went through the program, and now on the other side, they are in a completely different space. So it is our most popular program by far for women with type 1 diabetes, and it's going to leave you with a sense of transformation and integration between you and your T1D. The DCB, a little bit more detail, it provides a clear roadmap to lower your A1C and yes, increase your time in range, but we also go way beyond the numbers. We're talking mindset and hormones and relationship to food and relationship to diabetes, insulin sensitivity, identifying patterns, so much, right? And I don't want you to miss out on the opportunity to get into this program for the spring round. So the deadline to apply is Thursday, May 19th, which is right around the corner. So click the link below in the show notes to learn more about the program and apply. If you have any questions, shoot me a DM on Instagram. Thank you for listening to this episode. Thank you for showing up for yourself, and I'll see you next week, same time, same place. I want to thank the Diabetes Research Institute Foundation for sponsoring this episode. If you are somebody who wants to see a cure for type 1 diabetes in your lifetime, please go to diabetesresearch.org/give to make a donation. This is the only organization me and my family fundraise for years because this is where so much of the research is being done and the donations allow the scientists to speed up their research. Links to learn more about DRI and the work they are doing in the show notes below.